If you've always wanted to work with me and try the Artist Low Comedy method of improv, now's a great time to do it because all my classes, everyone's classes pretty much, right, are online. So you don't even have to, you're out of excuses because you don't even have to leave your house. You don't even have to take a shower. You can wear your pajamas. I don't care, all right? I just wanted to let you know if you're looking for a new approach to improv or you're somewhat new to improv, I am teaching 2 Art of Slow Comedy Level 1 classes in February. And one, I'm offering it at night on Wednesday, starting February 17th, and that's going to be from 7 to 9 Central Standard Time. And on Friday at 10 a.m. to noon Central Standard Time. For more information on the Art of Slow Comedy and this wonderful method that I've been teaching online now since March, believe it or not, and been teaching, you know, for years before that, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. Jimmycorain.com. I can't think of a better way to do improv than online using this slow method of improvisation because it really works online as much as it does in person. So if you're interested, again, go to my website, jimmycorain.com.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd.
Oh, hey everybody, you're listening to Improv Nerd, and I'm your host, Jimmy Corain. Our guest today is Marcus Sams. He's the founder of Moment Improv Theater in San Francisco. He is also the artistic director of the San Francisco Improv Festival, and he's one half of one of my favorite improv duos, Listen Sams, with the incredible Joe Liss. We talked to Marcus about duo improv and what's different about doing duo improv than working with a bigger group, the importance of emotions in improv, and he gives us a little exercise, and where he thinks the future of Zoom improv is going. Before we get to the Marcus Sams episode, I want to let you guys know, you probably can figure it out for yourself because you're pretty smart if you're listening to this podcast. I haven't been doing episodes for a while, and I think part of the reason is this pandemic, it's really kind of gotten to me. Now, there's some days I wake up and I'm like, oh yeah, this is, you know, I can get through it, and you know, I have a lot of hope. And I got to tell you, there's other days where it is just so dark and so depressing, and I just go into kind of a depression. And I don't know if you've experienced this either, but it's really hard to focus on things, you know, for a long period of time. So that's my excuse for not doing episodes. I have been teaching online, and I've been loving it. When I first started, I was like, I'm not so sure about this. But when I realized, like, that people really need this connection, I really need this connection, it's really that gets me excited. The one thing there's a lot of things I miss about teaching in person, but the hardest thing for me still teaching on Zoom is, like, when the class is over. Like, if you're in person and the class is over, usually a couple people come up to me and they want to know if if they're going to make it, or, you know, what, you know, if they're any good, or whatever they say when they come up to you. But there's time to, like, decompress, right? But when you're on Zoom and it's like, you know, 9:01, right, at the end of class, like, you're like, okay, goodbye. And you hit a button and everybody, that whole screen just vanishes, and you're down in the living room all alone. You know, you're just like, that's really hard. That's been probably one of the hardest things in teaching Zoom. So enough about me. It's great to be back. I'm planning to get some more consistently. I'm not going to give you a number because if I do and I don't live up to it, it's just a good way of continuing to feel more shame. And no one feels more shame in their life than I do. I actually, email me your shame and I'll feel it for you. Enough about me. Let's get to this episode. It's a great episode. Marcus Sams is a great improviser, a great teacher, and just a great person. Here it is, the Marcus Sams episode. Enjoy. Marcus Sams, thank you for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Now, take me back to 2001. You're in Chico State University. You're a theater major and a business major, and you're doing a kind of a Whose Line Is It Anyways short form ripoff.
Yeah, I mean, When I first got into improv, I didn't know what it was. One of my good friends, Eben Burgoon, actually turned me on to it. He invited me to a rehearsal, and it was fun. You know, being a theater major, it was like a sense of freedom away from the written word. And we're just all friends playing games, you know? I think our name was actually, I don't know. I thought it was your line, which is a very original name, right? But yeah, we didn't really know what we were doing at the time. I feel like I got an excellent theater training from the program, but the program didn't have anything to do with improv. There were no improv classes. It was definitely not an emphasis at all. So we had pretty much no direction. And then all of a sudden, like a semester later, I found myself in a leadership position in the group. And we're just having fun, playing games. And that was kind of my first ch times playing in improv.
You know, I want to ask this because I've known you. I think we met at the Chicago Improv Festival and we've kept in touch. There's a confidence that you have and a kind of can-do attitude, a leader. You don't open your own improv theater if you're not a leader. Where did you develop that?
Oh man. Let's see. I would say that I've always been like excited to make things happen. Tech-wise, for instance, when I was a kid, while other kids were playing with their toys, I was the kid that was unscrewing them and like cutting the wires and touching wires together and like making things happen. You know, many of my toys didn't fully catch on fire, but they definitely started smoking. And so I've just always been like, let's get into this. Let's do this thing right now. Funny enough, now that I've been doing improv for so many years, which 20 years at this point, like I'm such a nowist,
Can you
like
explain
living
what
in
a
the now.
nowist is?
It living in the now, like being hyper attentive to this moment right now. And as you can see, that's probably where I got the name Moment, right?
The name of your theater is Moment
Yeah,
Theater. Yeah.
Moment Improv Theater, yeah. But like as far as doing, I grew up in a 3 mile long town, Willits, California. And I ever since I was a kid, I was always in the sports. I was always doing plays. I mean, I remember one time I was in a play, Greater Tuna, and I had a rehearsal at the same time as a track rehearsal, a practice. And I was literally running in between the theater and the track so that I could participate in the meet and I could do the play, which opened the next week.
The thing, knowing you, that doesn't surprise me at all. It doesn't surprise me. And then after you graduate from Chico State, you're a working actor in San Francisco, which I would imagine you're making money at it when you told me that. And then on Mondays, Leela, which is another improv institution out in San Francisco, you're taking
Absolutely.
classes there. And what happens there that you're like, you know what, I want to focus on improv.
I would say I found my tribe at that time. You know, it was a group of dedicated improv instructors. Jill Eichmann was actually, I would say, my first official improv instructor. And then we later on went on to perform together for many, many years as Shades of Grey. It was the dedication to the work. It was the approaching the work from an acting perspective, I would say, which fascinated me because what I discovered, you know, the first audition that I had in San Francisco was for a film called Unflinching Triumph. And it was actually, it won a Webby Award. It's like, it was mostly improvised. And at the audition, I remember that I actually left the spike mark and started coming towards the camera in this instance. And the casting director was like, "Oh, you're fearless." And that's what I was feeling from improv. This sense of freedom, this sense of fearlessness. And so once I started seeing the work that I was doing in improv bleeding into my daily life and my auditions. And then on top of that, Leela is a very holistic improv company. And it was like, I was noticing all the positive benefits of confidence, not tripping over my words as much. These things, you know, all the benefits you know about.
Right, right. And then you you liked it so much that you were like, okay, I want to teach this. So it's almost like you were willing, you know, because most people, as you know, get into improv and they're like, I want to perform. I just want to do shows. But you, in a pretty early into the game, you're like, I want to teach this stuff. What was it about it that excited you to teach?
Honestly, I think that it was when I found that people valued my voice.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I remember when I started off, I had this philosophy or attitude, or maybe it was just because of my upbringing. We could dive into psychology at some point.
We'd like to right now. What was it about your upbringing?
I think that it was just like, one of the big reasons why I ended up gravitating towards the theater, I think, was because you can be a chameleon, you know, you can find more acceptance. You can put on roles. Because I grew up in a 3-mile-long town, and I like to say that the demographic makeup was hicks versus hippies, mm-hmm. you know, and I didn't necessarily fall into those categories. And I was one out of very few African-Americans, mm-hmm. like very few. And I myself, I consider myself a half-African, mm-hmm. half white and half black. And so in this all white town, leaving Willits, or like being in Willits, I think that I struggled maybe a little bit with like identity, like who am I?
But isn't that a common thing that biracial people experience? They don't feel comfortable, you know, accepted by the black side, and they don't feel comfortable by the white side. Is that?
I think in all cultures, right? Mm-hmm. In all ethnicities, whenever you have mixed race, I think there is always that duality that you're playing with. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to Chico State, now all of a sudden, I was exposed to like more of the African-American population for Chico State. Right.
Right.
So for me, what I found myself in this position of like, I don't know where I feel most accepted. But when I went into the theater, when I was able to dive into characters, it just felt comfy and at home, you know? So we took this tangent because the original question...
You're a better listener than I am. That's why you can work with Joe List so well, you know? Chicago people, you know, we're in the moment, we're doing characters, but your mind is always like, oh, we've got a structure here. We, you know, let's go back to the form.
Well, that I think is my IT side of my brain.
Yeah.
Right. I remember it. What got me into teaching? It was because when I was originally learning improv, in classes, I would be asked, like, so what's coming up? What are you thinking about this? And deep inside me, I felt like, who am I to tell other people how to do this? You know, I'm just Marcus. I'm just here like y'all's, right? But then later on, after doing it for a couple of years, and after really performing a lot with We Be Negroes, with Sean Landry, and I felt that confidence in my voice. And then at one point, I'm like, someone asked me how I do the space object work that I do on stage. And I'm like, I don't know. Let me think about that. And then all of a sudden, my IT brain, my number crunching side, which I hate math, by the way. I use number crunching very loosely. It started to systematically break down the process that I went through. And it came down to if-then statements. And it came down to creating like shapes in space. So reaching out, not knowing what you're grabbing for, looking at it, identifying it, trusting that the mind wants to make sense of the world around it. If there is this thing, you know, then there is this other thing. And, oh, I hate this thing. So if there's a remote control, then there is a coffee table in front of me. If there's a coffee table, then there's a coffee mug. If there's a coffee mug and it has warm coffee in it, then it's warm coffee, which means it's not sitting there for a long period of time, but it actually belongs to me. Oh, it's the morning time. Why am I holding a remote? I'm watching the news.
So you've got your whole environment, time of day, and hopefully you'll get to relationship quicker because you know this.
Yes. And so what I discovered was I wrote an 11-page chapter on just the process that I go through of creating a space object.
Knowing you, that seems short, actually.
Oh, it is. Because from that 11-page chapter, that translated into a 4-hour space object intensive, which was my first class. I taught that on my own, and everyone was very receptive of it. So then I started creating these other 4-hour sessions of different improv topics. And I called the whole series Improv Sunday School. Because, I don't know. At this point, I feel like improv's my religion and the stage is my church.
So let's talk about the show that I first saw you in, and I thought it was just tremendous. And that was Listen, Sam's. And that was with it's a duo. It's with you and Joe Liss. And I got to tell you something. Joe is one of my all-time favorite improvisers. If people don't know him, he certainly has been a guest here on Improv Nerd. But I mean, he was on Second City Main Stage and ETC, and he's worked with everybody. I mean, Farley, Tim Meadows. I mean, you name it. And the guy's amazing because he's been doing it for so long. But I've never seen any performer in my life, and I'd love to get your inside working with him, who every time he hits that stage, he is filled with so much joy. It's coming out of every pore of his body. What have you learned from working with him? How do you tap into his joy?
Being present and noticing. And I think that was the magic that struck between us. The first time we met, it was at, an Armando, rehearsal. He was, brought in as a guest, at Leela.
He was going to do the monologist, tell the story?
No, a performer.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I had never met him. I didn't know any of his past or anything. And so I'm just like, We get the suggestion and we go into this scene and it's completely silent. No spoken words. We're just reacting and off of each other. And it felt like magic. And then after that scene, I'm like, hey, we should try a duo or something. I love doing duo work. And he's like, all right, sure. Why not? We'll throw it down. See what happens. You know? And then I remember I met him at his house in his Empire Room. It's got a wonderful house in Oakland. And you go down into the Empire Room, and it's like he has the Beauty and the Beast wall of books, mind you. So we're able to just like pull, okay, here's a word, let's play with that. So we start a rehearsal and it's just flowing. And what we discover is that all of a sudden, like, instead of saying scene or cut, we just start shifting into different scenes. And then we start coming back to previous scenes. And that was our first rehearsal. And we're like, I think we have a format. And to this day, what blows people away the most about our act is the seamless transitions. Or it feels seamless to the audience. But for us, what it is that noticing. The smallest thing. One of my improv mantras is anything is everything. And everything can lead to something. And so the slightest shift in energy between us, maybe it's a look, maybe it's a change in the shoulder movement. Boom, we're in a new scene, new characters, new everything. And then after we lay down some of that, then we start wrapping things in together.
You also, you specialize really in teaching duo. I think one of your specialties is. What are some tips for people that are just getting into doing duo that you can give them that help out, that you've seen that's different than, let's say, doing an 8-person Harold or montage?
Doing duo work gives you the gift of never being off the hook. You have to pay attention to everything, right? Because all you need is what's right in front of you. You need your scene partner. You come in, you look at them, you notice the shape of their body, you notice the distance between people, you notice like what feelings are coming up for you, and you speak it. Just like in 8-person improv, in two-person improv, I'm never inside of Joe's head, and Joe's never inside of my head. So we don't know what we're gonna do. We don't know where it's gonna go. But we do know that when something shifts, we better be paying attention. Because that is the moment that matters. That's the new thing.
What is it about Joe that you love playing with?
Unpredictability and the fearlessness. I think to be a really good improviser, the more fearlessness you can have, the more willing you're just to say, I'm doing this right now, then the better.
And how does he do it? Because if no one's seen his work, he does these incredible characters. Mm-hmm. I don't think he uses foul language. I mean, he works very, very clean. What is it that, where is he taking the risk? If you went and saw one of your shows, where's Joe taking risks? And where's the fearlessness in him?
Well, as you know, he's a writer. Mm-hmm. Wrote for Drawn Together, Third Rock from the Sun. I keep... It's hard to define because it's literally anything. Mm-hmm. Like... We did a Hawaii improv show and we were in a scene, and then what we thought was going to be just a shift into a new scene, it turned into a micro scene where all we did was move chairs around, and we're fine doing that. I would say maybe fearlessness. There it is.
Yeah.
It's this idea that you are enough.
I'm gonna throw a theory on this, and I'd like to get your opinion, because when you did your show, we were short a person. Joe sat in, and I think that what I learned from Joe is his commitment level is, it can be the stupidest idea ever, and Joe will commit 110%. Not only is he going to commit 110%, he's going to enjoy doing it. That's, to me, as someone who is an improviser, that's the thing that I struggle with the most. And I think that's what that's, to me, what his fearlessness is. It doesn't matter what it is. He's going to jump on it like a grenade and have a great time with it.
Yeah. It's operating from that place of no fear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That fearlessness, the ability to attack the moment. By the way, I talked to Joe this morning. He says hi.
I love that guy. I love him.
Right?
And you know, if you haven't seen these two work together, Marcus and Joe, it's a great show. And you guys, it's a really good balance. And you really, to me, you know, you provide the structure part of it. Does those roles ever change?
So what's interesting is I hear you talking about structure, and as you know, like, I love structure, right? I plan meticulously.
You'll put in the time, you'll put in the hours to plan.
Oh yeah. Days.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the improv, as soon as we step on that stage, nothing else matters.
How do you get to that state? How do you get to that state?
And what I want to say about the nothing else matters is that we are stream of consciousness. We get the word of the day, and whatever that is, we take a moment, we digest it, we say it a couple of times back and forth, and then all of a sudden we're off to the races. And we have no clue.
So how do you get to that moment before you get on stage that nothing else matters? How do you get there? Is there a ritual you guys do backstage? Is there something you're doing?
I will give the PC version of what I say to every improviser. I look them straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying, you PC. It's yeah.
Yeah, I'll go PC. Don't
okay,
worry.
Please. There's a disclaimer. Yes. If you're listening, Marcus is going PC. All right.
I look them in the eye, and I know that, like, there's so many different ideas around this phrase, right? I've got your back. You know, some people are like, why should you ever need to say that? That is like, that should just be the given, right? For me, it's like, I look them straight in the eyes and I'm like, whatever the frick happens out there, I've got your mother frickin' back. And I mean that. Like, if I see my fellow improviser starting to fall or something, I will be the first to dive in between their body and the floor. I've gotten improv injuries. Improv injuries help. But to have that level of support for your fellow player, that's so huge.
Let me ask you this. How did you get to that point? Because I've been doing this since I was 18. I'm 56, a long time. And I still, like, if you did something crazy on stage, my mind, judgment would be the first thing that would go into my head. And I would be slow to react to supporting you if I didn't think it was a great idea. How have you been able to, like, break it down for yourself? And for somebody like you who, you know, analyzes and dissects and puts stuff under the microphone, have you ever looked at that?
What is the worst that can happen? What's really at stake? Right? There's times in our lives where it's like, you know, if you're in this moment and there are real stakes, like if you don't do your job, you will get fired. That is a pretty big stake, right? But once you cross the threshold of that stage, it's make-believe. I've made a pact with my fellow scene partners and my fellow players that, like, wherever we go, it's going to be okay. Because we know that this is theater. Yes. I want to say that one again. Theater.
But
right?
I think someone who you come from a theater background. And
yes.
My experience working with people who've come from an acting background, they're willing to go places. They're willing to go farther than someone who's just going to take improv. Do you think that's true with you? Like, because so if somebody does something as an improviser, they can get really self-conscious. I've experienced this too, where it's like,
yes.
Oh, I don't want the audience to think that I'm really like that in real person. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to think I'm that dark of a character. I'm wondering if your theater background helps you to go even further to taking those risks.
I think it does, because when you're working with actors, you know, I think my acting, the person, Bill Johnson, that I consider my kind of theater papa, he once walked into the room and said, "You are all insane for wanting to do this, to become actors, because actors are the only people who willingly get up on stage night after night and get the crap beat out of them emotionally over and over again, and then you come back for more." When you're trained as an actor, you are stretched. You're stretched in ways that you are emotionally vulnerable. You allow yourself to be affected. And that's a huge, that's one of the, I think, the largest things in improv, is if an improviser can learn to allow themselves to feel, then that is a game changer. One of the cornerstones of moment improv training is this idea of the moment of change. And once you start playing with this concept, you always recognize the moment of change when it happens. And the moment of change is when something shifts in you or the other person. And what that idea and concept asks, it asks, will we be present enough to notice the moment of change? And will we be brave enough to take action? And this is not just for improv, but also what? Life, right? So now let's go back to the emotion stuff. In order to notice the moment of change, you have to be present. In order to be present, you have to know where you're at. In order to know where you're at, you have to be in touch with your emotions so that you feel that shift.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you one question here. What do you
just
do?
One.
What do you do? Just one, yeah. What do you do? What do you do? An exercise to get improvisers to get in touch with their emotions, their feelings.
That's a great question.
I'm one for 15, so you know, that's good.
No, they've all been fabulous.
Okay.
And you have a little history doing this. So,
yeah.
Okay. So there is an exercise that I call emotional stretching.
Okay.
And what I do is I have everyone in the room stand up. And once they're standing, they have their, and I'm just going to raise my desk so I can.
Right. Like, you're actually standing up. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're standing up and you put your arms to your sides. And you take a big deep breath, and everyone in the room closes their eyes. Because doing this work, look, emotions can be scary, right? And so we need to create a safe container as instructors in order for our improvisers and students to explore these things and still feel safe, right? So I have everyone stand, arms to their side. They take a big deep breath. They take another big deep breath. And then I say, think about a moment in your past that you felt happy. And try not to get caught up on the perfect moment, because there is no such thing as the perfect moment. There's just a moment when you are happy. and continue to breathe. And then I let them sit in that happy feeling. And then I ask them, now take a big deep breath in through the mouth, out through the nose. Feel how it feels to breathe in happiness. What is the physiological response that your body's feeling? What are you noticing? Are you noticing that you're starting to curl with a smile? Are you starting to notice that you're getting some tingling sensation elsewhere? Okay, now take a breath, and now we're going to shift to a different emotion. I want you to think of a time when you felt loved. The kind of love that makes you safe, that fills you up. And so I go through a bunch of different emotions and just let the students experience them. And then the first round I do in my level 2 class, which is scene work, I go the light version. But then later on, after I've worked with people and people feel even more safe, then I add to it and I dive into sadness and fear. Because here's the thing is, I feel like oftentimes, at least a lot of the improv that I've seen, if this represents, and I'm for the listeners, I'm holding up my arms about 3 feet apart. If this represents all of the emotions of the human experience, then improvisers tend to only use this much. 1 foot of it. Because we're taught that the audience doesn't want to see that. That's not comedy. But the thing is, what we're lacking is humanity. It's fear. It's judgment. And I'm not talking about self-judgment, right? The editor, the judge that's affecting our work. But allowing ourselves to judge the other character. Because that stuff is what gives us points of view. It's that stuff that, look, if you're playing an assistant to a mad scientist, I want to see what fear that assistant has. What is the moral dilemma here, right? And not all improv has to be funny, but guess what? By grappling with those real, truthful, authentic emotions, you're increasing the chance that you're going to affect your audience. And when you affect your audience, then you have them in the palm of your hand and they'll follow you anywhere.
Why do you think improvisers are afraid to do the sadness, the fear, and even the anger on stage?
Well, I think that as humans, those emotions don't feel good. We don't like to feel things that don't feel good. But my philosophy is that every story ever written, whether it's a film, television, book, improv scene, is never about the day Sally went to the store and got milk and was successful. Yay! It's about the day that Sally tried to get the milk and she tripped over the train track and the train was coming. And we see the story unfold from there. So if you think about it, every story is about change. These characters are living in a skin that they can't live in anymore, and something in their lives must change. Change is hard. Change is difficult. Change is challenging. So if you take that into improv, the characters that we play on stage in an improv scene, they're there to be changed. And that is going to be challenging. You know, the humor comes out of the audience seeing themselves in the work that you're portraying on stage. That's how you really draw them in. And there's so many types of improv. It really ultimately depends on the style that you're going for.
And you, at moment, you teach the style that you like. Now, you also you say on
which
your
website... Which leaves the comedy, usually.
Right, right. But you say on your website you are, and I want to make sure I get this right. In 2020, you are one of the, one, you're, explain, the African-American owned improv theater and training center. You had put that on your website, correct?
Yeah.
And then you said you got kind of a response when you did that.
Well, what is beautiful is that there are more ethnicities in general coming to the forefront in this art form.
And you didn't discover that until you put it on your website, right?
I think that it was summer of 2020. I posted in a group on Facebook. I'm like, hey, I've tried to do some research around this, and is it true that I'm the only African American owned improv training center, like with a 6th level training program in the United States? And no one corrected me. And as we know, the internet is one of the first places to get corrected from afar.
Right. And criticized. Right. Yeah, criticized, yes. Too.
And yeah, so I started saying that, you know. For me, I've never wanted anything that I've done to be about race. I want it to be about the work, doing the work, getting it done, you know. I want the work to stand on its own because I think that's the way it should be, right? But I decided, yeah, I'm going to lean in. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lean into this because I, as a community leader, have an opportunity to inspire others. You know, I have the opportunity to show, hey, yes, you too can do this, right? And in the past 6 months, I've been thrilled to see so many more talks around race and in improv, you know. I don't feel like I have been able to come out and be a big part of those talks yet. I have always been like, heads down, I got to get this done. Because quite frankly, until recently, I've probably done 90 to 95% of all the work that it takes to run my company. You know, and that's from web design, graphic design, building the infrastructure. And then when the shelter in place came, it took me 5 days to pivot and I was already teaching online. And then I created this whole fly technique, this new approach to online improvisation, and then figuring out all the technology. So my plate is stupidly full, but I'm working towards alleviating a lot of that work, which is super exciting.
So in these conversations, what is important to be talking about in terms of race and improv?
Giving opportunity. You know, I did an interview for a company called WeXL, and one of their guests was talking about Burning Man. And she was African.
The Burning Man is the, for people that don't know, it's...
Go for it.
It's out in, was it in Nevada? And it's like, they go out to the desert and it's art installations and drumming and all, anything you want to do.
It's a huge artist community. It takes place over a week. You're on the desert surface. I've gone once.
You got to bring your own water and food. It's like camping too, right?
Yes. You're like building wind structures to try to get the playa dust out. Actually, the playa dust did not leave my car, my 1990 Nissan Stanza, until I got rid of it. Mm-hmm. One trip, just the air system got totally messed up. But so she was talking about how she went to Burning Man and how it was so amazing. And it was life-changing for her. And she had never gone because she didn't think that it was for her. Because on all the advertising, on anything having to do with Burning Man, she never saw African-Americans there. And so this idea of like showing people, like there's a lot of people doing this. There's a lot of people of many different ethnicities, you know, doing this art form. Yes, we can. You know?
Let's shift for just a second because we don't have that much time. Tell me about the future of online improv.
Oh, okay. So I think that it's amazing. I think that there's so much potential. It's ridiculous. And I know that, and I've talked to others about this, that when we shifted to online improv, you know, there were some improvisers that are like, all right, let's do this. Then there were other improvisers that were like, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Online improv, ugh. But the improvisers who are working right now, especially if you're just learning improv, if you're able to get into those classes that that have been like well thought out and using the technology, there's so many opportunities for growth. Because we're on camera right now, right? And I mentioned this earlier today, is this idea of you are enough. And that is one of the hardest lessons for any improviser, actor, or human to learn. You are enough. When we're on stage, we're far away from the audience. We're big, bold, using our voices, right? But once you start doing improv for the camera, you don't need all of that. If you feel it in here, your heart, if you're going through those emotions authentically, then it's going to show on your face. So online improv gives us the tool of teaching our improvisers that less is more. It's working from the inside out. What's this emotion? And now I'm dealing with it, you know? As far as technology goes, I mean, in some of my classes, I'm flying people around in virtual reality using Google Earth to teach people how to do improvised storytelling, you know? So the limits are only the limits of our own imaginations.
What do you tell the people that are like, well, you know, I've done live classes and I've done Zoom classes and they're not as good?
I say that there's bias there. We're holding on to the past. We're hoping for things to come back to normal. And I don't, whatever that new normal looks like is going to be very interesting. And we're all going to have to navigate that. You know, and ideally we're going to be able to navigate it together. But moving forward, Moment Improv is always going to have an online component. There's something crazy magical about, this happened for me in an Improv 1 class. I was watching the sun set out my window and I was seeing the sun rise in Budapest. I've got a student in Sri Lanka that every class we hear the morning monks in her background. And we hear monkeys and peacocks, you know? So it's like this level of connection, this global connectedness is just so amazing right now. One thing I will say about shows, I think that there is a huge difference between online content and live stage content. And I would urge, if anyone was asking for any unsolicited advice, urge us to all start looking at the way we produce our shows more like a television studio would. Because that's our medium now.
What would that be? What's a couple things that they could do to make it more like film or TV?
Thinking about how you're editing your piece together. You know, when I'm doing a live show, I don't think of just the show, the content, the meat of the show. I think about the show is from the moment your audience steps into the door of your theater.
So you've got music on, lights, lights on the stage.
Yeah. Yeah. So what does that feeling evoke? You know, and then like, how do you make it clean? Right. So I'm personally using OBS. OBS is an amazingly free piece of software that you can basically gives you a TV studio. Right. I mean, right now I can do so many things, like turn on lights and turn them off.
So are you editing your live shows like you were, like it's a live sporting event?
So yes, I would say. And so basically the approach that Moment is taking for online shows is, I basically figured out a way how to make, live improvised sitcoms with transitions, establishing shots. And then, so those are the edit points. But then on top of that, instead of doing the show in gallery view, which is a lot of what we're seeing, mm-hmm. I'm doing all the shows in speaker view, because in my mind, that speaker view, that is a built-in editor that's already in Zoom. So what I'm training actors to do, improvisers to do, is to have that focal point. And so this is my look, and this is one camera angle. Just like this is a camera angle. This is a camera angle. And each camera angle means something different in the production process. So we're actually editing our own content by our voices. So if we were doing a scene, you know, and I wanted to, you're talking, and then I go edit.
Yeah, so I'll just put that over there, and then I'll see what I can do, and
maybe... Oh, you're going to put it over there?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So now when you talk, you've triggered the camera operator, so the camera operator is to you, which means I know that the audience is not looking at me. So that frees me up to now move and change my camera position, and then next time I talk, from the audience perspective, it looks like there's edits happening between the characters.
So people aren't in your long form aren't going edit or tag out Marcus. It's more technical. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. It's an actual approach. I mean, and it's amazing. Just last night I had like the fourth class of my Teleprov C class, and they're getting it. And it was so awesome to see, oh my gosh, the scenes that they were doing and really hitting the camera angles. Because what we're talking about is technique, precision, right? If you're sloppy with technique, it may come across as crappy. But if everyone is nailing the technique, it looks so good.
We got to wrap this up, but before we go, we always end the podcast the same way. What one piece of advice would you give to an improviser starting out today?
There's so much more. Keep doing it.
Marcus Sams, thank you for being our guest on Improv Nerd. And there you have it, another great episode of Improv Nerd. Had nothing to do with me, had to do with our guest, Marcus Sams. I want to thank Marcus Sams of Moment Improv Theater in San Francisco for being our guest. Check out their classes as well and everything they do, their shows, at momentimprov.com. That's momentimprov.com. I'd like to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. That's a kind of a scary thought, isn't it? If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning improv classes called The Art of Slow Comedy, as well as workshops and intensives, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. And as I mentioned, there is a level one class starting in February. Two sections, actually. Follow us on Facebook, Improv Nerd, because it really helps with my low self-esteem. And our Twitter, that's improv_nerd. I want to thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, walk and don't run.